ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
From the pocket, launching downfield, underthrown and intercepted. Kelee Ringo has an escort down the sidelines. All the way to the end zone, and Georgia is going to conquer the Crimson Tide.
If you stopped watching this game sometime in the first half, I get it. But you made a horrible mistake. Because that is how the Georgia Bulldogs won their first national championship in 41 years, blowing up Nick Saban and college football's Death Star 33-18. So today, we bring you inside the stadium and this game's aftermath in Indianapolis with our friend Mike Golic Jr., who explains everything you may have missed and more. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, January 11th. This is ESPN Daily.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Mike Golic Jr., where are you right now, man? How are you feeling right now?
I have made it back somehow to the Courtyard Marriott right near Lucas Oil Stadium after trying to mentally prepare myself for what the, I'd say, downtown bar owners in Indianapolis are trying to prepare themselves for right now, which is all of the barking Bulldog fans descending on them like locusts.
Dude, so the barking, you know, first off, for people who aren't familiar with just how real the barking is, can you explain just how the barking works?
It's so deeply guttural. And I think for so many of us, you're used to on the broadcast hearing, those aren't boos, they're, you know, whatever, someone's long double-O'd last name. In this case, if those aren't boos, those are a massive adult human beings barking at 18 to 23 year olds on a football field. It's really remarkable to hear in person.
I don't know if they have barked as loudly and as gutturally as they have tonight in like 41 years, Mike. I feel like that is safe to say. So let's talk about how it is that Georgia got here, why everyone is sort of baying at the moon and at each other at this moment. Because when I saw that picture of Uga on the broadcast, just sort of like almost asleep in his crate, the Georgia mascot in his crate, I didn't think we were going to get this sort of a game, right? Like the folds of his eyes were sort of like sinking over his face. It kind of felt like how I felt on my couch. The first three quarters of this game, if you had to describe it for people who maybe literally slept through it, what did it feel like to start off?
It felt like exactly what Nick Saban missed about college football back when he warned us about the up-tempo spread offenses and asked if this is what we wanted college football to be. This was hearkening back to the bygone era where Nick Saban was squaring up against Les Miles at LSU with 9-6 final scores. I was with our colleague Ryan McGee, great writer at ESPN,
yes,
who sat next to me in the auxiliary press box and said, I think America could use a good 15-19 final score in a college football game. And while he didn't get his wish, it had all of that because we saw two star defenses, really the strength of both these teams on display in that first half. And I think the real surprise was that Alabama's offense that had been really the star of the show in the SEC championship game only mustered up 9 first half points.
Yeah, I mean, this was the first time in the college football playoff era, Mike, that neither team scored a touchdown in the first half. The 5 field goals, I believe, tied for the most that we've ever had in a national title game in the BCS and CFP eras. And so when all of this stuff starts to get good. It feels like that's in the fourth quarter, right? I mean, it's that play where Stetson Bennett, the quarterback of Georgia, who we'll get to in depth in a second here, but when Stetson Bennett is pressured, it looks like he's trying to throw the ball away, and it gets ruled a fumble. And Alabama's Brian Branch, the defensive back, he recovers it, even though I don't even know if he knew he was recovering a fumble at the time. Take me inside the building at that point. What were the Georgia fans sounding like at that particular moment?
Yeah, there wasn't barking as much as the like slow wailing and gnashing of teeth, because that was the here we go again moment for Georgia. We talked about so much this sinking feeling of despair for Atlanta sports fans, for Georgia State sports fans at large here, seeing this go the way it usually goes. And I disagreed with the call as it was shown ad nauseum on replay here. I thought, you know, the ball in hand going forward was going to be an easy one. Credit to the aforementioned Brian Branch for having the wherewithal to say, hey, I might as well scoop this up. But that was the moment, Pablo, where we all thought we could get the same old Georgia. And the response after that, to me, is going to end up being, I think, the second biggest story in this game outside of the Jamison Williams first half injury to the Alabama star wide receiver.
Yeah, so wait, so explain what the response was from there. How would you describe what Georgia did from then on?
What Georgia did from then on was decide that they were going to, for lack of a better term, stomp a mud hole in Alabama's you-know-what. That was as physically dominant a performance up front. And this was the Georgia game plan all along. Stetson Bennett, in the SEC championship game, I believe had north of 45 passing attempts. He had 26 in this game, and you'd be hard-pressed to find one or two of memory in that fourth quarter after that moment here. Certainly the next drive dominated. They started stressing and getting pass interference penalties. But Pablo, this was a team that up front decided to, from point A to point B, move Alabama against their will, and it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, look, this was a game full of NFL talent everywhere, right? We're going to see so many of these people who were on the field, injured on the sideline. We're going to see them again pretty soon. It feels like we have the Heisman Trophy winner in Bryce Young. But in terms of who impressed you the most, or what impressed you the most as a unit is concerned, how do you give an assessment of that?
I would say for me, the most impressive unit was that Georgia secondary. The way that they were able to cover across the board, because again, we came out of that SEC championship matchup saying that Alabama had exploited the one area of this juggernaut Death Star Georgia defense, one of the most talented, historically, statistically dominant units we've ever seen. Alabama decided we'll get the ball on the perimeter and we'll play away from Jordan Davis. We'll play away from N'Kobe Dean and we'll try and get our yards there. And really from the middle of that second quarter on, Georgia's defensive secondary completely across the board locked down in coverage, gave the group up front time to start getting home more and start affecting Bryce Young the way they had been trying to all game. And it, to me, that was the biggest difference from game one of this doubleheader that we had with Alabama and Georgia to game two in the title.
Yeah, so okay, so Bryce Young is dealing with the mud hole that has been stomped unto him. Stetson Bennett on the other side here, on the other end here. I mean, when he finds A.D. Mitchell for a 40-yard touchdown, Mike, to put Georgia back on top, I mean, the Stetson Bennett story, it seems a little too on the nose, right? Like former walk-on, JUCO transfer, 5 foot nothing, that kind of a deal. But it all felt tonight also just phenomenally real. And I'm wondering what your evaluation of Stetson Bennett was today.
I took a look. The fine folks at ESPN Stats and Info put together a plot chart of Stetson Bennett's completions and incompletions during the course of the game. And it was basically about 24 dots within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. No completions outside of the right hash mark. Literally the right side of the field shut off. And then one glorious triumphant dot in the back of that end zone where he had that 40-yard completion. Alabama, in the last 30 games, had given up two completions of 40-plus air yards. They gave up two in this game today. Stetson Bennett did exactly what he was in charge of inside this Georgia game plan. When we talk about the perfect game script, it is their defense leading the way, and it is him being able to hand the ball off to that backfield, hand the ball off to Zamir White, hand the ball off to James Cook, let them go to work, and then just deliver on one or two big moments in that game to swing it. It was Kirby Smart and Todd Monken's game plan executed to perfection, and it was this quarterback back in his comfort zone away from all of the big, gaudy, record-setting numbers for him in that SEC championship game and just being able to do his 111th here.
Yeah, when he was crying on the sideline, it occurred to me that he really did begin to look like Timothée Chalamet. And I was like, you know what? what a night. And by the way, speaking of Call Me By Your Name, like, I can't believe, speaking of on the nose, I can't believe his name is actually Stetson Bennett. It is just so perfectly what a Georgia quarterback should be named, isn't it?
It is. I don't know how college lacrosse let him get away. Stetson Bennett should be a two-way midfielder at Duke, and yet here he is. Completing what is a legitimate movie script. And
yes,
I know we have sort of worn that storyline out over time. I thought this was amazing as I looked at the stat sheet after. He's the first walk-on quarterback to beat Nick Saban since Brian Greasy, our colleague, did it at Michigan in 1997. Like, it is remarkable in all the ways that we want our sports to be. And he's had to hear about it this entire week. You know, all the lead up to it, when we hear Nick Saban wax poetic about the yummy rat poison that we tend to feed these teams that are constantly looking for slight, Stetson Bennett never had to go very far to find it. Everyone in the midst of looking at these two teams, on paper, when we started tracking five-star rankings based on most composite rankings, these are the two most talented teams in the history of college football that have been assembled. Wow. And in the midst of all of that, you had Stetson Bennett IV, who most people looked at and said, going up against another team with the Heisman Trophy winner on the sideline, he has to be the lone liability you consider. And he managed to deliver when they needed him to, and it's insane.
So he delivers that 40-yard bomb to Mitchell. And in the drive after that, Stetson Bennett goes and delivers a 15-yard touchdown to Brock Bowers. And at this point, Gojo, it does feel like the O-line just starts bullying Alabama, right? I mean, look, you played on the offensive line in Notre Dame. You played in the trenches in the pros. So describe what it felt like for you to watch this Georgia team just run the ball over and over and over from that point on.
Pablo, it's the most uniquely satisfying feeling in the world. Like, especially in this day and age where we spend so much time, you know, debating the merits of running the football and these larger conversations that happen on the NFL level. But my favorite thing is when you hear defensive players or defensive coaches talk about stopping the run, it's so deeply personal because it is the most physically brutalizing part of all this. It is the most demoralizing on the other side, that slow sinking feeling of knowing it's all over and they're going to make you feel every bit of this. I knew, Pablo, when I saw it was about the 6-minute mark of the fourth quarter and Georgia was really starting to lean on him. And you go back and look and you see beautiful large men wearing numbers in the mid 50s and the high 60s dive bombing over the top of these piles as they're pushing for the extra 3 or 4 yards. Once you saw the pile jumpers, I was like, these guys can finally smell it. They know it's here and they're going to take the one spot. Pile jumping, Pablo, might be the lone place where offensive linemen can really show off the joy of the position. And it was on full display for the Dogs.
So for people who aren't familiar with the pile jumping phenomenon, Gojo, like, explain what it's like when big Justin Schaefer, right? That's number 54, all 330 plus pounds of him, is basically frog splashing onto the pile at one point on one of those drives, right? Like, it seems like this is a, I am feeling myself and you're now going to feel all of me too.
Pablo, as big people, we're generally not good at talking smack. We're usually out of breath. We understand that if we say something, we're just going to go back and have to hit a now angrier defensive player for the rest of that game. But once you see them gassed here, and again, we don't look as good celebrating all the time, but when you take off and you see 300 plus pounds take flight, I think it's one of the greatest photos. I hope that somewhere, some Getty Images reporter has this yes. beautiful airborne shot that's going to grace the cover of some magazine article that Bulldogs fans hold up for the next 40 years as they celebrate this occasion.
It was glorious. It was glorious, Mike. And it was like the kind of perfect thing. It was the icing. It was the man in a tuxedo atop the wedding cake of this national championship game. And this was, again, Georgia's first title since 1980, when they had Herschel Walker. And incidentally, by the way, they happened to beat your Notre Dame Fighting Irish. I'm sure you have no memory of this at all, of course. I'm sure you've never talked about this, never heard anybody in your family talk about this. But yes, Georgia beat Notre Dame in the Sugar Bowl that year to do that. But at this stadium tonight at Lucas Oil, what was the feeling from the fans afterwards? Was it just straight up euphoria? How would you describe the particular brew of emotional complexity that comes with waiting 41 years?
Oh, it was equal parts relief that for once you didn't have the here we go again, that one play, that what we thought would be incomplete pass ruled fumble didn't come to define yet another negative outcome for this program, but also just elation, right? These are so generational in the way we talk about these things. And Pablo, in college football, I always say when you bring a head coach in, in this sport where it's so difficult to get near this playoff conversation, you pay for proximity to the prize. You want someone that's going to keep you close enough every year to have a shot to finally break through. And Kirby's done that the way he's recruited, the way he's built this program. But it's different when you've also got that direct proximity to your biggest source of pain. And Georgia, like many other of their predecessors in the SEC, have had to stare down this Crimson Tide monster. And so to finally break through that moment, who knows? I mean, I'm sure early betting odds are going to have Alabama as a favorite to show up in Southern California next year for the college football playoff title. But none of that matters right now because they finally got to slay the biggest beast in their life. And it was a catharsis that is why we all kind of get around and cover this sport. It was really, really incredible to see.
All right, Mike, after this break, I want to ask you, what happens to that beast now?
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Mike, part of any good college football discussion involves the wringing of hands. And I want to ask you here because this did feel inevitable in a sense, right? This particular matchup, Alabama being in the middle of it again, the criticism, of course, of the college football playoff has always been that it's so predictable, it's a letdown, et cetera, et cetera. Do you expect to see the same teams over and over again here? How do you feel about that, given what we just watched here tonight?
Yes, I expect that to continue. Even as we have these conversations around expansion that, as we saw today from the decision makers involved in this, seems very stalled based on a lot of the frustrations around conference realignment, hurt feelings, and all of this business of football that is really more of a business of feelings at this point.
Yeah.
Pablo, this is going to keep happening because at its core, college football is a competition for resources that very few teams are capable of winning in the way that Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and really a select few others are. Maybe if Brian Kelly can get LSU pointed back in the direction they were a couple years ago, maybe if what goes on in Southern California, as we now see that USC program poised to take another leap back, maybe if Lincoln Riley can do that, maybe if Mario can do it at Miami, but there are just so few places that can recruit on this level. And so even if we introduce more teams into all of this one, the resources are still going to be controlled by a select few. And we've seen even in the four-team semis, the competition in those first round games just really hasn't been there. And so that's not going to change if we expand, but that's also not a reason to keep from expanding anymore, because that was never about competitive balance. That's really going to be we kind of got to wait for Nick Saban to retire. Bill Connelly does such a great job writing about all of the challenges that we face here for the top of the sport going forward. And I jokingly, but not so jokingly, said, really, most of them are solved by the most dominant force in college football history finally deciding when his days are up coaching at the helm of the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, so Nick Saban right now is 70 years old, right? He turned 71 in October on the 31st of that month. And just to be very clear about what he's bringing in next year, according to Mark Schlabaugh, our colleague, he has the number one team in the country next season. Number two will be Ohio State. Number three will be Georgia. That's his way too early rankings that are out already. Are you going to be disappointed if we're back here with Georgia and Alabama again?
I will not, because I enjoy watching the best do what they do, right? We've had dominant stretches in so many sports. You know, as someone who grew up in the Northeast as a kid, this was the UConn women's basketball conversation, usually the lazy one that people had, but it was spurred by just how dominant that program was for so long. And so I want to see at the end of the season us get to watch the two best football teams, even if they tend to come from the same place. I can understand the casual college football viewer or someone that exists outside of the southeastern portion of the United States in a sport that, despite the national game it's become and the way it's branded, is still extremely reasonable. Extremely regional. I can understand how that might be frustrating to some people, but no, I won't be disappointed at all, because these are the two best football teams that we saw through the course of the season, and there's really no disputing that.
Yeah, well, the other thing about this too, right, if you zoom out even further on the history of college football, I mean, obviously, what Alabama has done in the last decade, incredibly conspicuous. That is sort of the defining theme of all of this. That's why Georgia's win tonight is so particularly meaningful. But also, Gojo, even amid all of this sort of like conference realignment stuff, it always feels like college football has been a sport that's kind of this, you know, oligarchy, right? There are a couple of teams that have always kind of run everything, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's the one thing that, as we get all the hand-wringing that goes on, you're absolutely right. When you go back and look, we see decades dominated by a couple of teams maximum, depending on how recruiting hotbeds have popped up, depending on how people respond to some of the innovations in the sport. We've talked a lot lately about, you know, when all of a sudden college football became something that was a lot more nationally broadcast, when you open that up to a larger swath of the sport. And now we're going to see this same sort of shuffling of the powers at top as name, image, and likeness and the money surrounding that become a bigger part of this process, as the one-time transfer rules change the way that some of these top-tier programs can plug holes in their roster through what has become college football's pseudo-free agency. But it will still be, again, dominated by these handful of programs that exist at schools that are going to continue to properly fund the sport. Dollars drive all this. We see, whether it's the teams that are willing to spend on extensive staffs like Nick Saban's at Alabama, full of analysts made up of former NFL head coaches that we sometimes forget are just sitting there helping Nick Saban go and win all these games, spending on lavish facilities that help recruits, and now that name, image, and likeness money that will largely serve the same purpose around these organizations. It's not going to change much up at the top, but it's sort of that Red Queen theory of you have to keep running in order to stay in the same place as college football evolves.
Yeah, we saw this week, of course, Nick Saban and Kirby Smart both calling for increased regulation around name, image, and likeness, talking about the haves and the have-nots. And what was your response to those two names in particular doing that, Gojo?
Yeah, I wanted to caution everyone. When you hear Nick Saban warning you about the direction college football is going for blank reason, he is doing that to tell you he is about to weaponize that very thing and use it to beat all of you in a fun, exciting new way for him. I don't have to go back to ancient history for this, Pablo. We talked about this when Nick Saban talked ad nauseum about, is this where we want college football to go? As the pace of play ramped up, as this became a league more driven by offense, as the SEC West became a time and space passing league, Nick Saban then looked around and said, all right, I'll just go out and get three straight first-round quarterbacks, as we imagine Bryce Young will follow in the footsteps of Tua Tagovailoa and Mac Jones, I'll get the first Heisman Trophy-winning quarterback in the history of the school, and I will dominate the game in this way. So if Nick Saban is starting to get out here and complain loudly about the direction college football is going in some way, he's only doing that as he warms up his arm to throw the newest pitch in his arsenal for a guy that does not need any more help.
Well, so speaking of what Nick Saban is going to do right now, Gojo, because he's not going to retire. That's not happening just yet. Is he going to go like make a call to, I don't know, like Matt Nagy or whoever? Like, which fired NFL coach is he going to hire? Like, what happens right now for him, do you think, as we psychoanalyze the most powerful person in this sport from afar?
I'd imagine Bill O'Brien's probably going to get a look at some sort of NFL job, and Alabama fans are going to be able to blame a fair amount of their problems on him during all of this. I jokingly saw Kevin Clark from The Ringer in the lobby of the hotel as we were talking about the recently fired Brian Flores in Miami. And I said, it sounds like a stop to the Nick Saban School for Wayward Boys, where he goes and becomes an analyst for a year down there. And then the next coaching cycle, he's definitely a name at the top of the list. But yep. Pablo, they just reload. Nick Saban has always been famous for, even after national championship wins, being the guy on the phone the next day with recruits, because to him, the machine never stops. That's the Alabama difference, is it's been a constant tinkering and adjusting of the model. Nick Saban, in addition to being the best football coach in the history of college football, has also been the most adaptable, which is a terrifying quality that he's never been content to win just one way. I think it is, to me, the most alike he is with Bill Belichick on any level, is they can always be whatever the situation calls for. For Nick Saban now coming back, a lot of this game was, I think, driven by just the health of his team at this point, finding out that even Alabama's depth is human at some point.
Fair.
They are going to be back on top in a way that only this program can do soon again.
So meanwhile, as Nick Saban goes and tinkers, his former protege, Kirby Smart, victorious tonight, he promised on the podium, Mike, that, quote, there's going to be some property torn up in Indianapolis tonight. So where are you off to at this current moment? Where are you off to next?
Pablo, I am holding down Ford in my bed. I am going to put as much furniture in front of the door as possible, because I don't know what happens now for downtown Indianapolis, but I am getting out of the way, and I am going to let the barking people do whatever they have to do to downtown Indianapolis, because 41 years in the making, I know what kind of party I'd be having, and so I'm going to stay out of the way of the party they will be having.
Mike Golic Jr., thank you so much for, you know, stomping a mud hole in ESPN Daily.
Thanks, buddy.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.